gentlemen, welcome. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Henrik Palmgren from Sweden, and this is Red Ice Radio, 100% independent media that looks into many of the topics that you are not supposed to know about, and that you, in many cases, aren't even allowed to discuss and investigate. We cover a lot of down-to-earth and grounded topics, more so today than during our early years, before we put the pieces of the puzzle together. But we also cover what might seem as some outrageous claims now and then. We shouldn't dismiss out of hand. There are a lot of things that we are being lied to on a regular basis, every day. We have to be willing to listen to material that presents a different view. After all, the very same establishment that keeps telling us that we are not being replaced in our own countries while doing it and shooting us down as being silly conspiracy theorists that believe that mass migration will, pose a threat to us now and in the future, those very same forces, that same establishment, is also telling us what we should perceive when it comes to our surrounding world and the interpretation of it. They're pushing a certain view in the academic world. And the question is if this is because that is the truth, or if there's more to it than that. Science is a new kind of religion, although it wasn't supposed to be. They have made us believe, though I would say it's with faulty science, that there, for example, are no differences between races, between different people. They say we are all equal, which empirically is just not true. So we have to be willing and ready to question what they are selling us. We also have some new aspect of science that has snuck its way into this interpretation in recent years, like quantum mechanics, for example, that has left people believe almost anything, it seems. It's a fine line to walk in terms of what we perceive to be the truth, and also what we're willing and ready to question. Well, one thing that I can say for sure is that if we aren't even ready to discuss and argue new ideas or aspects that questions the fundamental established ideas and views of our time, we are not going to get very far in our understanding of our surrounding world, or ourselves, for that matter. So with that in mind, today we're going to question some of these aspects, or at least bring on a guest that will question them for us, present some material to us that you can evaluate for yourself and look into further if they sound interesting to you. Now, the main topic that we'll be talking about today is basically looking at an alternative cosmology and question things like gravity and how this has been explained to us. We're also going to present things such as the electric universe model as one that seems to make more sense than the current established one. Our guest is Robert Otey. He has spent the past 25 years doing research into alternative cosmology. He has discovered a wealth of suppressed information which contradicts and debunks the seriously flawed theoretical gravitation-based cosmogony taught in academia. Robert's work presents the electric universe model based upon the foundations of sacred geometry, meaning the gravity-based Big Bang entropy universe invented by academic atheists, which came from nothing only to return to nothing, is false. Robert has a background in music and music production. He's majored in communications. He studied classical, baroque, and jazz music, and also civil engineering. Robert wrote the 1,200-page free online book called Free Energy and Free Thinking in 2001 after spending thousands of hours of independent research into alternative science and cosmology. Okay, well, we have a lot to wade through today, so we'll get started. Just plunge right in. We'll see what you think about some of his ideas. Welcome, Robert. Thank you so much for coming on with us. Hope you're doing well today.
Excellent. Thank you, Henrik. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. And for those who might not know, you did a show with Lana. Is it a couple of years ago now, I believe?
It's been a couple of years.
Yeah. And it was interesting touching base with you again because, we've kind of, in certain topics, folded back in towards the same area, arched in the same direction. And it has to do with some of the things that we'll get into a little bit later today. Because this is a pretty, for some, a kind of intense, controversial topic that we have lined up here. It might be a bit out there for some people, but I want you to hear this one out. We have some interesting things to discuss and put forth some things that will hopefully put some things in perspective for folks. So we're going to talk, among other things, about the fraud of Einstein and many of these Nobel Prize recipients. Most of these are hand-rubbing merchants. I wanted to bring you on and hear you lay forth some of the material concerning, you know, the science and basically the model that they have proposed for our universe and the interpretation that they have promoted above others. We'll go after Einstein a bit later, this kind of saint of the scientific age. But I wanted to, you know, make sure that we start at the right point here as well as we kind of transgress through this and get people a chance to hear you out and consider some of the things that you propose that are, you know, kind of basically competing models, that there are models out there that explain, for example, gravity that haven't received at all as much attention, I think, due to the control of the sciences by a very small group of these elitists that have advanced their own theories to the point of absurdity also, really. I mean, you presented this as well. We have things like dark matter and dark energy, black holes, singularities, event horizons, you know, gravitational waves, quantum gravity. That whole area in itself is pretty weird, you know, with the quantum field theories and all these kinds of things. But let's just kind of begin and talk a bit about the electric universe first, because that's really a position that puts this other more established model kind of in a different light. Tell us how you got involved in looking at the electric universe and why you were attracted to that as opposed to this other stuff that we'll talk about later.
Yeah, sure. most people don't really understand that there are many different views of cosmology, that many different models that are out there, which academia never teaches you about. So you have to go and explore these on your own. Everything that I studied led me to the electric universe. The work of Victor Schauberger, the work of Nikola Tesla, T.H. Murray, and people like this, all these people knew that it was an electric universe. Even Emmanuel Velikovsky. There's a rich history of models that go way back over 100 years ago. A guy named George Woodward Warder, he was writing about the electric universe. Velikovsky argued with Einstein till the day he died, that trying to convince Einstein that this was not a gravitation-based universe, but it was electric. Scudder Kleist, also with his book on the universe, he argued against the gravity-based cosmogony. So a lot of people don't know that these models even exist, but the fact is they've always been there, but they've been suppressed by academia, because academia wants to thrust upon all of us this idiotic Big Bang cosmogony, like everything in the universe came from nothing with a huge explosion. You know, and, you know, even as a child, I mean, we were teenagers and we used to laugh at this stuff. We knew that there was no Big Bang. It was just an idiotic proposition to begin with. So, unfortunately, academia has stuck to these really false models because it really benefits the people that are running the racket. I mean, the energy barons, the warmongers, and the central bankers, they all make enormous astronomical profits due to this backward system that we've got, which is based on explosion-based fuel-sucking technologies. And really, all that comes down to is gravity. The entire academic model is based on gravity. And my work has been to show that this gravity doesn't exist. I mean, it was invented by Newton. Gravity did not exist before Newton's time. So, and we've spent all these hundreds of years trying to find this mystical force, but nobody's ever found it. And they have lots of bizarre, you know, ideas about graviton particles and gravity waves and inward pulling gravity and warp space and time. And all this stuff is delusional. It has nothing to do with the actual universe we live in. So, you know, my introduction to all this came through the electric universe, and that's why I'm basically stating with the work I'm doing what all these other people have said without stating it specifically.
Right.
Is that gravity really doesn't exist.
Okay, well, we'll talk, you know, just a little bit here about, you know, the electric universe model and a little bit more kind of background on that for those who don't know. But just explain a bit more when you said that gravity doesn't exist, because obviously we can see the effect of something which we put the name gravity upon, right? So
yes,
explain that a little bit.
Exactly. Well, the electric universe, there's only one force. There's only one thing in the electric universe, and that's electricity. So everything we're calling gravity is due to electric potential and electric compression. And the electric universe model teaches that, you know, that the spheres and ring systems that we see populating the infinity of space are created by twin opposing vortices, electrical vortices, which give form to these things, whether it's a galaxy or a planet or a moon or whatever, or an element for that matter, because everything from beginning to end, and from the smallest to the largest in this universe, is based on these twin opposing electric vortices. So electricity is the only thing there is in the entire universe. There's one force and one substance, as it were, the electricity, which creates in the electric universe model, there's 9 octaves of matter, and those are created through the mating of sex-divided electric waveforms, which basically meet head-on and create either ring systems or a sphere. So, and that's what we see in nature. We see rings and spheres all throughout nature. So,
yeah, exactly. And I mean, I urge people to go back into our archives and take a look at some of the shows that we've done on the electric universe. I find a lot of the evidence presented very convincing. A lot of the models, the suggestions, the ideas. There are other groups like Thunderbolts. I think there might be some disagreements with them that you still have, you know. But still, the point is that there's a lot of other material out there that has been presented over years now that is very persuasive, and many predictions actually have come true that has been outlined. For example, when probes or satellites and things like this go up, or experiments that have been performed in space in terms of impact and some of the predictions pertaining to that. But if you were talking to someone who hasn't heard about the electric universe model before, let's say that they haven't listened to any of our shows or anything else, what would you say to them as some of the main proofs, if you will, that this model trumps the current academic one that we have?
Well, I would just approach it from the side of debunking gravity, because gravity, it's a mythical force. I mean, there's no proof of its existence whatsoever. It's just people keep parroting the same thing, saying, Newton called it gravity, but, people called it something fell before that. There's things fall. That's fall. 9.8 meters per second squared is what is the acceleration of something that falls towards Earth. It's not a force. That thing is just falling. It's falling because, like, if you had a meteor or something, it's a dense, wound-up piece of matter that's highly electrically charged, and everything in this universe is trying to find its equipotential. It's the place where it's supposed to be in its electrical zone, its equipotential area. So a meteor, for instance, will seek rest in the large electric body of a planet, but there's no force pulling it to it. It's all about electric lines of force and everything, finding its proper place within the electrical lines of force throughout the universe, because the entire universe is electric. We're bathed in electricity. This, as T.H. Murray said, we're living in a sea of energy. Tesla said the same thing. When we hook our machines to these currents that are all around us, then we can drive the machines of mankind with the energy that's just right here around the Earth. I mean, there's massive electric currents flowing all around, creating this sphere that we live on called the Earth.
Like a dynamo effect, right? It's spinning within its own kind of environment, which, of course, generates a tremendous amount of lightning, which is electricity. You have not only the regular lightning going from the atmospheric level and down, but you have these mega lightning called, I think they call them sprites, right, which actually goes upward into space, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, so this is where people like have got into the motionless electric generators, where you set up something. I mean, Christopher Dunn, he's claiming the pyramids were motionless electric generators. They're ways to harness these waveforms that are surrounding us everywhere. I mean, we're completely bathed in this stuff. So you can have machines that don't even move that take advantage of the movement of electricity as it moves around our planet.
I wanted to ask you a bit more about that later in terms of, the claims of free energy and whatnot. I have a couple of things to bring up on that. But how does electricity produce the effect of what we call gravity then? How does that work?
Well, everything on this planet, there's twin opposing vortices that go through the poles. They're imploding space through the poles and radiating through the equator. So we have an electrical system on this planet that creates a sphere. Those actions, those motions create a spherical body, plus the sphere is being frozen into its condition in space because space is freezing cold. So we have a sphere that's electric. I mean, as Tesla said, the Earth is just a massive capacitor. I mean, it's receiving electrical currents from the sun. The sun's receiving electrical currents from the rest of the galaxy. You know, I mean, this is just these are all massive electrical circuits is what's going on through space.
Tremendous amount of energy in these, obviously. And tell us a bit what happened with Newton then, and how he, if we go back to the origins of this, and how you think he came to this conclusion, and then later we can talk about maybe perhaps why that has been like encouraged and picked up. And, you know, as we know, I think there's a lot of scientific knowledge that at the outset starts as, you know, just being inquisitive, trying to figure out, you know, what happens, why does it happen, how does it work, basically. And then you have these become the, you know, officially adopted kind of models, and then people run with that, and they just continue to build work and work on top of that. And I think that that's a good idea for people to understand that that's why they had to, for example, invent all these things like dark matter and you know, these massive energy sources out there that basically kind of explains why certain things happen. It's very kind of confusing. But let's go back. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. Newton, how did he come to this conclusion? How did that work out?
Well, I'm not really sure how he came to the conclusion, but I know what the mistake is that he made, and that was proven by Pari Spolter in her work, a book called The Gravitational Force of the Sun, where she shows, with all of the latest observations in the solar system, that Newton's so-called law of universal gravitation is in fact false. And really what happened was he used Kepler's third equation, which is an orbital equation, is purely geometric. There's no myth creating, Kepler didn't say, hey, there's some myth called gravity that we can, that's doing this stuff. All he was doing was saying, look, this is, with this math, I can show you these motions. And it's that plain and simple. It's area times acceleration. And those values all line up perfectly if you use that. But if you use, Newton's universal law of gravitation, all the values come out really bizarre. They're way off. I mean, by orders of sometimes like 8 to, 10 to the 8th or 10 to the 12th differences, which are massive, of course. So the real problem with Newton was he added the product of two masses to Kepler's equation when it wasn't required. It was, so he was saying, look, if a mass has got, if this mass is so big that it's got this much gravity, and this is his problem. This is, I don't know why he did what he did, but it's false. It's been proven false. So
I want to make sure people understand this too. Explain to us why is the small apple attracted to the big object, if you will?
I was saying that earlier with the meteorite. Everything that's made of so-called matter, something that's wound up, dense matter like that, it will always seek rest. I mean, something small like an apple is going to seek rest in the electrical. It wants to find rest at the center of the Earth because that's where the rest is at. But the only way to get there is to fall to the ground. I mean, that's the potential. The electrical potential of the apple will cause it to go to the ground. It has nothing to do with a fictional force called gravity.
And there's a lot of, I think, I would assume, a lot of other ideas in terms of what actually is, what is at the center and how that's produced. I mean, there's all these speculations, basically. I think we've been down, I don't know how far it is. Is it 8 miles or something deep? I might be way off on that, so sorry if I get that wrong. But the point is, there's all these theoretical ideas that it's, iron, molten iron core that's liquid and spinning, and there's, other things going on. What do you think is at the center of the Earth?
There's the very center, there's a point of stillness, a fulcrum, which controls the twin opposing vortices. But it's unfortunate academia is so lost in this respect, because if they knew about the twin opposing electric vortices that actually give form to the planet, they wouldn't have to invent some idiotic theory about, molten nickel iron at the core. They're saying that's what creates the so-called, they call it a magnetic field. In the electric universe, there are no magnetic fields. It's only electric lines of force. So they've got it wrong there even.
Is that, do I confuse that with electromagnetism, or are these two different forces?
Well, in the electric universe model, electricity is the only force that there is. Magnetism would be, there's cubes of space that control spheres and ring systems. The cathode planes of those cubes would be called magnetic stillness. The point in the middle, which is the fulcrum that controls the twin opposing vortices, that's called gravity. But that's stillness. So, I don't want to use the term gravity because it's pointless. It should have been aborted a long time ago. But even people like Walter Russell retained the term, and they shouldn't have. I mean, essentially, academia is saying basically that gravity doesn't exist as well. They just don't know it. When they say something like, you know, that the electrical force is 10 to the minus 37th, the gravitational force is 10 to the minus 37th weaker than the so-called electrostatic force, then they're essentially saying it has no force at all, because 10 with 37 zeros behind it is actually impossible for any of these eggheads to even visualize. There's no human that can understand what 10 to the 37th even is. They love to throw around these numbers and stuff. So, I mean, look at the difference. I mean, you've got one force that has a force, and then something else that's 10 to the minus 37th. It's essentially zero. They're just not saying it, you know?
Well, you know, we're told that when we go way, way into the, I guess, the granular parts, really, that makes up our reality, that these contain almost magical properties. I'm not only now talking about the atom itself that has, you know, a strong force and a weak force, but I'm talking about the kind of things that come to us through quantum mechanics, right? This is the very latest. And this is interesting because this has spawned a tremendous field of kind of, what do we call it, pseudo-New Age kind of ideas and theories. We get this whole, you know, the secret, and we get all these, like, almost like a new religion that has been created
yes.
around this idea of, like, the double slit experiment and all these kinds of things. And I'm very interested in really trying to get to the core of that issue alone, of trying to understand, you know, how can those finds have produced so many things. But first of all, explain to us a bit about what all of this is from atom to the quantum level and or quantum mechanics, as they call it. What is going on with all that?
Yeah, well, I'd say, you know, one of the people that was really responsible for this, a lot of this confusion, is Fritz Capra with the Tao of Physics. I think that injected a lot of insanity into the whole New Age or truth-seeking movement. There is no quantum mechanics. Let me start off with the nuclear theory of the atom, which is a fraud as well. But then we'll take out quantum mechanics. A guy named D.B. Larson did a really excellent job of demolishing the historical development of the nuclear atom in a book called The Case Against the Nuclear Atom, which is free online to read. And I'll be sure to give you a link to this.
Right.
And anybody can read this. This is not for mathematicians or mathematicians or whatever. This a layman can understand this. And this is all you need is logic, sanity, and reason to understand these things. It's all laid out there, the entire story of the you know, the non-existent nuclear atom. So that means also that there's no such thing as a strong and weak force, nuclear force. Those were created. Those were also inventions created by eggheads to try to explain the contradiction of how there could be, you know, all these protons huddled together in a nucleus. Well, you know, they should all have mutual repulsion. So they have to invent these bizarre forces to explain away the absurdity with the original theory, this nuclear atom, which is, you know, based on materialism. And this is really the unfortunate thing about academic science, is it's totally materialistic reductionism. And as any spiritual person knows, this is all Maya. This is all illusion. This is nothing but, you know, smoke and mirrors and light, really.
So how do we explain this in terms of how they measure all of this, how they present evidence for this? Tell us a bit more about, you know, what D.B. Larson explains in the case against the nuclear atom, if you can.
Yeah, well, a lot of it's due to mathematics, you know, using math falsely to project onto things. But, you know, let me say anything about Larson. My professors in 1976, I was studying chemistry at American River College in Sacramento. Chem 1A, first year of chemistry. After 6 weeks of learning this stuff about the nuclear atom, they confided. They said, "Look, there's no such thing as a nuclear atom. We're told by the powers that be, our curriculum, we have to teach this to you. But understand, this is a model, and it's not reality. There's nothing that has to do with reality here." So that was an eye opener for me. But you know, later on, I was able to discover D.B. Larson's work, and he systematically goes through it and shows you the absurdity of the assumptions. One false conclusion based, on top of another and another and another. That's the way the nuclear atom was built. It really started out with Rutherford firing, so-called particles through gold foil, and he found that, you know, they weren't being deflected in any great numbers. So what he discovered was that mostly the area within a so-called atom is empty space. But there's no such thing as an atom. I mean, there are elements, because there's no nuclear atom. There's no little electron balls flying in circles and orbits and stuff, and there's no protons and neutrons in a nucleus. There are twin opposing vortices, which give the various pressure conditions per octave to create this illusion of elements, this illusion of substance and matter.
So how does that differ from quantum mechanics? It kind of ends up in the same ballpark a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's more through psychosis. It has nothing to do with real reality. With all these things, I like to go for the Achilles tendon, right? You know, if you can take that out immediately, then you don't need to get drawn into their bizarre, spurious arguments, their mathematics, all the false, evidence that they produce. But, you know, the very fundamental, the foundations of quantum mechanics are Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, mm-hmm. and the double slit experiment. These are the two pillars of quantum mechanics. So take those out and everything falls. You don't have to deal with all of it. The shell game that's being played with the double slit experiment is they're swapping electron marbles, electron balls or beads or whatever from this non-existent nuclear atom for the electrical discharge waves they're shooting from the electron guns. They're lying to you when they say they're shooting particles. How would they remove an electron from the orbit of an element? You know, it's moving it close to the speed of light. What force would they be able to dislodge that and somehow control it and then send that little ball out their gun? They don't have it. This is total bullshit. This doesn't exist. So what they're doing is they're swapping electrical waveforms for particles. And this is the fraud. Bill Gatey has done the same exact fringe, light patterns from shooting a little $5 laser at a needle point, you know, a tip of a needle. You can produce the same exact thing. So their whole foundational argument there is total BS. Now, the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, it was really about the nuclear atom. It was all about how do we, you know the position and the velocity of the electron itself around, you know, this atom, this nuclear atom. It doesn't exist. There is no nuclear atom, so it's a moot point. I mean, it's like I could say the same thing about a proton, you know. I mean, and they could give me a Nobel Prize for that, for saying that we can't possibly know the position and, you know, the velocity of a proton as well. The point is totally ridiculous.
Let's talk a bit more about that then, in terms of, you know, quantum entanglement. And I think, you know, Einstein gets involved in this at some level here. We can definitely talk more about Heisenberg too, and kind of how, you know, the whole Copenhagen, you know, there was a meeting place there. There was a conference taking place there where a lot of this actually was formulated. Very interesting in itself. But Einstein gets involved at some point here, and he's talking about what did he call it? Spooky action at a distance, right? Wasn't that his term
right.
for it?
Yeah. Yeah, and God doesn't play with dice, you know, the
right.
probability factor.
Right.
So Einstein didn't support quantum mechanics at all. He was opposed to it.
But it still seems to kind of it correlates at some level, or have I misunderstood that it kind of meets up at the same place at some point?
I'm not sure I understand what you're saying there.
Okay, no, I just thought that his kind of spooky action at a distance was kind of, is very similar in terms of what they, some of the interpretations that we have today of, in terms of quantum mechanics, that it's like, you know, we have to look at it to basically influence it, or without an observer, basically, it doesn't exist.
Oh, yes, the observer factor. Yeah, that's all BS. You know, like I said, you just take out the Achilles tendon of this, and, you know, this whole thing of quantum entanglement, you know, like another, it's somehow magically, connected to some other photon at the same place somewhere else. This is ridiculous. It's all absurd. There's no truth to this. There's never been any observation of any of their stuff that's led to this conclusion. They just make wrong observations and wrong conclusions. And then they give you bizarre, you know, they want you to believe that the universe is not knowable, that it's this freaky, bizarre, weird, you know, thing that people will just never get. And that's total BS.
Well, you know, this is getting off track a little bit, but I think it's fascinating nonetheless in terms of how much they have pushed this idea of relativism, not only in science, but also actually moral relativism and everything. And it seems that, you know, with all the reductionism that we have, that we've been on this path of you know, taking away, basically, to try to get to the core of things. And I just find that idea, like, hilarious, that we go closer and closer in, right? We zoom in, we try to figure out, we divide, we split, we try to rip apart the very fabric of space. And now, when they claim that we've done that, basically the end conclusion here is basically, well, there's nothing there unless we're there to look at it, right?
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that too. You know, if you didn't look, if you turned your back, the moon would disappear or something.
Right,
yeah, right.
Right.
Sure. I mean, you know, that's the kind of insanity they want to force on us. They want people to be delusional about this. And also, I really think they want to turn away intelligent people from studying science. I know that I was turned off immediately once I found out that the nuclear atom was a fraud. I was looking at all this algebra that we were doing, and my dad's a nuclear physicist, and I'm like, Dad, what the hell's going on here? And he's like, oh, don't worry about it. Just do the algebra, you know, the grams and the moles, and this times that will cancel out, and you'll get your answer. I was like, what? It's like, that's when I realized that the reality of mathematics, the math of things that are myths. So there's most of what's been practiced in science I would call mathematics. It's delusional garbage based on math. Math is a language, like any language. It can be used to deceive people or delude people. People can become delusional by studying this stuff. They can actually buy into this graph and think that they understand it. But the math never translates into reality. There's nothing in academic science which explains nature. You know what I mean? They can't explain light, electricity, water, sound. They can't explain most of anything, you know? So
right.
They're just part of their theories.
Yeah, there's a lot of theoretics, a lot of algebra, a tremendous amount of money being spent on this too. But, okay, so there's obviously a lot of established science that kind of comes up along the way here, obviously. And folks, you know, listening, I'm doing my best here to kind of pose as many of these questions that come up as I can to Robert, so he get a chance to kind of explain, you know, his position on this as well. But one of the things, and so I'm sure I'll miss out on a few, so... You know, but I'm doing my best here. One of the things is, though, obviously with radiation and everything, right, that,
yeah.
You know, we can split the atom through that. We can create energy. We boil water and we can drive these huge turbines and generate, you know, energy, basically. What's going on with all of that then?
Well, radiation's real. I mean, even in the electric universe model, everything after carbon is radioactive. So, you know, carbon's kind of the fulcrum of the nine octaves, but... The transuranium series, you know, we get into uranium and plutonium, neptunium, things like that. Those elements are so densely wound up, so tightly wound with the electrical vortices that they have a very hard time holding on to all of their electrical charge. And so they're releasing it in bursts, in chunks, you know, like quantized chunks. And it's like, if you talk to these eggheads, they'll tell you that those are particles, you know, and it's like they do this with their bubble chambers too, with their, you know, hard-on colliders and stuff. And when they look at them, they see these things bashing together and then vortices spin off through the bubble chambers. And so they call that a particle, yet it's an electrical discharge, a burst of electricity that leaves a spiraling trail through their bubble chambers. And then they call that a quark or a lepton or a hadron or whatever, you know.
Was that the God particle, right? Was that
the pig's bozo particle is what I call it. I mean, it's ridiculous. There's no God particle. God is not a particle. God's not material. The creator is immaterial. The creator is universal mind and consciousness, which is omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, sexless, and formless. You know, it's not some dude with a beard sitting on a throne.
Are you talking about Karl Marx? No, I'm just joking. Yeah. So where is Einstein in a lot of this? I mean, obviously we have things now. It's so established, right? With these massive budgets and CERN and, as you say, Hadron colliders and just like these some of the biggest scientific experiments in the history of mankind with immense budgets. Just to go up against that alone, I think would seem. Preposterous to people, right? That why the hell, you know, would any of this even occur if there was nothing to it? Now, are you at a position where you believe that a lot of these people that are dragged into this simply, you know, they're working on this in good faith and they're trying to solve things and understand it? Or is there more going on behind the scenes in terms of why they're promoting this science?
Yeah, they're delusional if they're involved in this and they believe it's real. But you're right. The Zionists behind this science.
I did a slip up there, by the way. That's funny. But yeah, go ahead.
no worries.
The
scientists. Yeah, absolutely. They're the ones that are really pushing this false cosmology, and the Jesuits, too. But, LIGO and COBE, those are two examples of, well, LIGO was the laser interferometer experiment that cost the U.S. taxpayers $760 million. And that's one of the things that Pari Spolter's really fuming mad about, because she sees the enormous waste of this stuff. And the COBE satellite, these are experiments set up to try to prove Einstein's bullshit. I mean, this is the problem. I mean, there was $1 billion wasted on the COBE satellite. Steve Mather's got a Nobel Prize for it. The entire thing is a fraud. There's a really great site called Physics in the Age of Fakery by a guy named Beavis Day, and he breaks down the whole thing and shows you what a fraud the whole thing and how these people are constantly trying to prove Einstein, because the Einstein science is the false science. This is what's enslaving us to the backwards technologies we have. There's a guy named you heard of this guy named Christopher Bjerkens? Am I pronouncing his name correct? I think he's from Denver.
Yeah, I recognize that.
The manufacturer and sale of St. Einstein.
Oh, yeah. Jon Bjerknes. Yeah, that's right. Christopher Jon Bjerknes. Yes, I've heard of him.
Excellent. Yeah, that guy, that book is 2,200 pages long.
I tried to get him on, by the way, and I never been able to reach him. If he's listening, we do want you on. But yeah, go ahead, Robert.
Absolutely. I have an enormous amount of respect for him. His book's like 2,200 pages long. It shows the entire history of the Zionist manufacture and sale of their St. Einstein, pushing it, via every single vector of media mind control, academia, magazines, cartoons, whatever. I mean, we've been taught this crap our entire lives, and it's total BS. And this is the real problem, is that we always have to backpedal to go deal with Einstein. I want to just ignore the freak. I'm sick of dealing with Einstein. He's been debunked in every single way, shape, and form, and not from just one person, but from dozens and dozens of people who have taken him apart from every single angle possible. I mean, Bill Gatey with Einstein's Idiots alone on YouTube, his series demolishes Einstein. It shows you through logic and reason the insanity of the propositions put forward by this egghead with his Gedanken experiments, otherwise known as armchair theories. I mean, it's like that's the strength of his stuff. It was all these idiotic, we got the twin experiment, like one guy leaves in a spaceship at the speed of light. You can never verify or validate any of this stuff. It's impossible. So, and people get lost in their minds because it's too big of a leap in their minds to be able to understand what's really going on in some of these Gedanken experiments that Einstein invented.
Well, I certainly can agree with you in terms of the how he's been pushed, and I don't know how many movies this comes up in. Probably the reason Hollywood is pushing him as the saint, as almost like this god of an age, basically, of him having all the answers, and it's just, constantly being hammered into people. And it's very difficult to kind of break away from that. But one thing that I found interesting, and I guess it's not directly related to Einstein here, because if we talk about Heisenberg, we're talking about some of the opposition. But nonetheless, if we discuss the whole, Nobel Prize scene, the Copenhagen, was it the Copenhagen Interpretation it was called? Wasn't that right?
Yeah, by the Copenhagen Jews. I mean, that was a group of Jews in Copenhagen that came up with that one model of quantum mechanics. And what people often don't understand is there's literally dozens of models, and nobody can even agree. Nobody that studies quantum mechanics can agree with anybody what it is, because it's total BS. It has nothing to do with reality.
I was fascinated to find out that Niels Bohr, this famous Danish scientist, he was Jewish. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I thought it was. And then I'm looking at some of the people behind the not only behind the scenes, but like Wolfgang Pauli, for example. He was part of this. He was an Austrian Swiss born theoretical physicist, and he was also Jewish. and a lot of the people on the Nobel Committee and those people who awarded the prizes and everything. And it was like, wait a minute, because there is an interesting correlation here, which is because all of this is kind of taking place. I know that there was a meeting, for example, between Bohr, Heisenberg, and Wolfgang Pauli in what, the mid-30s, 1935, and it was right in this vicinity when, interestingly enough, also, you know, National Socialism is on the rise in Germany, and is basically, you know, kind of coming to power. And it seems to me, Robert, that there's a field here of a completely different type of science that is being brought into it. I mean, let's just look at for a moment on how tremendously successful they were when it came to invention and technology and progression forward of something which has been stagnant for years, right? And so, again, I don't want to jump ahead here, but it feels to me that this was this interpretation and this the way they pushed Einstein and the way that all of this kind of later came together with these Nobel Prizes and everything was almost a way to stand in opposition to some of the things that was developed during, you know, National Socialism. But also before that, right? I mean, Germany was very prominent in its science way before, you know, the National Socialists came around. But how do you view this dynamic between these two kind of, you know, battling and fighting factions, if you will? Is there something to that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the Germans considered Einstein an idiot. They knew his science was totally false. I mean, they had people like Victor Schauberger, Hans Kohler, Frederick Kraft. I mean, brilliant people that were working on their projects. They were the ones that invented the jet rocket. They were the ones that invented the jet plane. And Victor Schauberger created the flying discs that were stolen by General Patton at Peenemünde in 1945. That technology was brought back here. So the Germans were way ahead of us on everything. We were like stunted with this Jewish physics that had been forced upon us. Bohr with his ridiculous atom, you know, Einstein with his relativities, and of course later all this quantum quackery. So this was very unfortunate for us because we got way, way behind. And the Germans stuck to reality. They had nature-based science where they actually understood how nature worked with brilliant people like Victor Schauberger, who I consider to be one of the greatest people that's ever walked the face of this earth. And it's his philosophy, it's his technologies, it's his designs that would save this earth if we could implement those immediately.
You felt like in Germany they were just kind of getting started really on some of the development, some of the extraordinary inventions, and just look at how much of the space program that was, and patents and machinery and everything else that was basically, you know, stolen after the war and handed out to different countries, America and Russia, I think primarily, Britain as well. And but look at what they managed to achieve just by taking those inventions, stealing those patents after the war, you know?
Yeah, and stealing the scientists too, you know, Project Blue Book or whatever Paperclip, they brought those guys here, and they did the same thing in Russia. They took a bunch of the scientists, you know, over to Russia as well because they were so far behind. The Germans were the greatest scientists there were at that time. And I think they brought Schauberger into the war movement right about 35. They made him an SS, an officer as well, and brought him into the movement. So, I mean, there's nobody better than Schauberger's technology, though.
I think it was – let me see if I can find that passage. It was quite interesting. It was Heisenberg. Let me see if I can find that here quickly. I read it the other day. So things happened here during the Second World War, obviously, but he was considered to be kind of a collaborator, if you will, at the time, Heisenberg.
Right.
You know, together with Bohr and all these people, there was some controversy here that arose, and they basically said, well, you know, you're going, you know, kind of with them against us in this interpretation of reality, really, the cosmology, which we have found kind of not to be true. And it's a kind of an intrigue that takes place. I can't find this passage now. I'll see if I can find it later. But do you have any comments on that?
No, I remember you and I were talking about that the other day, and it was awesome you found that because it's totally right. Heisenberg, in a sense, was a traitor to his own people by supporting this Jewish science. It never was believable. The Germans could see through it from the get-go, you know, and why is Heisenberg supporting it? So you got to wonder what his objective was or who paid him off or what, you know. I don't know the inside story, but you had a really powerful
Oh, here it is. I just found it. And this is on Wikipedia, you know, so I'll just read this here. It says, after Adolf Hitler came to power in 1933, Heisenberg was attacked in the press as a, quote, white Jew by elements of the Deutsche Physik, German physics, German physics movement for his insistence on teaching about the roles of Jewish scientists. As a result, he came under investigation by the SS. This was over an attempt to appoint Heisenberg as successor to Arnold Sommerfeld in the University of Munich. The issue was resolved in 1938 by Heinrich Himmler, head of the SS. While Heisenberg was not chosen as Sommerfeld's successor, he was rehabilitated to the physics community during the Third Reich. And it goes on from there. But it's kind of interesting, yeah. Isn't it? That it's like it was such a clear division at that stage. And the reason why I bring this up as well is that I think that there is still something to this dynamic of bringing in a type of science which is not approved, if you will, by those who today kind of control the field almost entirely. And this includes, the Nobel Committee, the Nobel Prize, and all this kind of stuff as well, of that they need to kind of prop up the only version that they want to offer us, right?
Right. And, you know, the truth of the matter is these wicked people, the powers that be, as they were, they knew in 1892 all about free energy. I mean, that's when, you know, Nikola Tesla created it at Colorado Springs with his tower there. So they knew what the real science was. They knew what the real physics was from way back when. So when you know that kind of stuff, and by 1913 you've got control of the printing presses with the Federal Reserve, you got all the money in the world, and you can buy off anybody and everybody you want, and you can promote anybody and everybody you want, and get rid of anybody you want, because you got all the money in the world. I mean, and I know for a fact that those guys printed, you know, quadrillions of dollars that we never knew anything about. The Federal Reserve's never been audited, so they just print the stuff and give it to the people in the tribe, you know?
Right, right. So, I don't mean to make fun here, but basically, what you're saying is, gravity is a Jewish conspiracy. Right.
Well, the modern gravity.
Right.
Absolutely. Because look at all the dribble that's been created. You know, Big Bangs, dark matter, dark energy, Mons, WIMPs, nachos, neutron stars. I mean, it goes on and on. Nuclear furnace stars. The sun's not a nuclear furnace. Everything in the universe is electric. Everything is explained through electrical processes. I think that's what Thunderbolts has done really well. They've done a really good job at showing the fact that everything's based on electricity. I mean, they have some problems with their cosmology as well, but at least they got that right.
Well, what else can you say about Einstein and the way that he has been promoted as a saint? Is it, what other components have you looked into to many of the ideas that he was pushing that kind of we need to deconstruct? Is there more here?
Not really. I mean, the other aspect of Einstein that's pushed on us constantly is he was such a wonderful humanitarian. And we see all these quotes, and I have to doubt that he even wrote any of this stuff, you know? Have you seen all these humanitarian quotes constantly of Einstein?
Yeah.
The great
philosopher. Sure, of course. Well, it's obvious that he's kind of becoming a god of our age of science, right? That science is there as a kind of a method to take over failing belief, basically, and faith, and when Christianity and kind of reductionism has taken its place to a certain extent, what stands there to kind of to accept people into it is that type of science with Einstein as one of their saints. And then if you want to go a little bit further and become more mystical, if you will, then you do have the quantum mechanics there waiting for you as well. I mean, just look at what that has yielded in terms of what people are managed to believe. And I, in no way am I saying that I have all this figured out or I know what's going on or whatever. I'm just trying to look at this, an objective way and see who's been pushing what and for what reason and whatnot. And all I can say is that, I mean, I was fascinated for years by quantum mechanics and to a certain extent, if there's any truth to it, I certainly still would. But I've become very skeptical of it because I've seen the effects of it, if you will, and I haven't seen much kind of resolve coming out of that particular theory of like, okay, but where, you know, what does it mean? Where do we go from here? And it seems to kind of just go on and on and on, and there's ton more of theoretical calculation that they need to do all the time to be able to explain how the universe really works, right?
Right. Exactly. And look at the fruitcakes that are pushing it. You know, like you said earlier, Jay-Z Knight with, you know, What the Fuck Do We Know and The Secret. I mean, that's just psychotic drivel, you know. Oh, Ramtha, the 35,000-year-old Lemurian warrior. You know, he comes back and he tells us that quantum mechanics is the way to go, you know. It's just total, you know, it's absurd, you know. And you see it from every other angle, too, this quantum drivel that they keep pushing on us. It has nothing to do with reality. The universe is not something that's not unknowable. I mean, it's a divine creation. It's beautiful. I mean, the Creator creates it constantly. And if you have a relationship with the Creator, you can go into a space where you can look at the universe from the Creator's side. You'll see that it's nothing but a majestic creation of utter beauty. It's incredible. There's an enormous amount of order and harmony and resonance and balance in this universe. Not some freaky, you know, weird quantum crap, you know.
So you do kind of take more of a mystical or a spiritual approach to this. Would that be correct?
Absolutely. The universe is spiritual. I mean, it's the creation of the Creator. And this is the biggest problem with academia, but they're mostly atheists, because they can't prove God in a material way. They say that, you know, the Creator does not exist. This is the biggest mistake that science has made ever. And this is a recent invention, because the great men of science before, and I do think Newton was great, although he made mistakes, he was very spiritual, extremely spiritual. And most of the scientists up until about the turn of the 20th century were very, very spiritual. I think this agnosticism and atheism is a recent invention, and it's idiotic, because how can you have a creation without a creator?
Yeah, that's right. I think in 1704, Newton actually he came to a prediction that the world will end in 2016. He had all this interesting work on like kind of alchemy and like kind of more spiritual stuff, and yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, most people don't understand that he was extremely big into the alchemy and the study of the Bible and the study of chronology. You know,
right?
He did massive works on chronology as well, which Anatoly Fomenko is showcased in his work.
Right. Right. Well, you know, there's a lot there, and there's a lot to say about that. I want to take a break here in a little bit, and I want to dive deeper into some of the aspects that we haven't talked about yet and kind of, well, just extend our conversation a little bit about these subjects. But before we take a break, is there anything else you want to mention to people now in the first hour, the first free segment, in terms of, where they should go to find out more about this, or let's say if they still kind of, they think about your work and they think you're wacky or whatever and like, my God, this is crazy stuff. What would you say to them to encourage them to look into this for themselves?
Well, first of all, I would understand why if they thought I was insane, I would understand why, believe me. I know that this is difficult for a lot of people to understand. I know that the nervous system has to be ready for this. More than anything, the nervous system has to be ready than the mind, you know? And I can say the same thing about Anatoly Fomenko's work. I mean, I listened to those killer little trailers that Michael Caine did, you know, for his book, for his volumes. He's got 7 volumes, actually, on YouTube for like 7 years. And I kept, you know, they were kept enticing me and provoking me to want to do it. It took me 7 years to go out and buy Anatoly Fomenko's book, you know, his first volume. And that was largely due to the New Earth Channel and Sylvie's work exposing Anatoly Fomenko's work to us in the West, because he's from Russia. And she's done a very good job of enticing people to go out and look deeper into his stuff. And now I know people are going to have the same reaction to me. I mean, it's an extremely audacious statement to say, look, there is no gravity, okay? It doesn't exist. People have been hearing about gravity their entire lives. It's like how we see people falling. That's gravity. That's not gravity. It's due to electric causes, not gravitational causes, because the gravity doesn't exist. So that's where I would leave the first part of this, is just saying that gravity does not exist. It's a myth. And I understand people are going to have a hard time with it, but they can go to my website. I've got 2 books, my new book on gravity, and I've got a 1,200-page book called Free Energy and Free Thinking that's free. It's been up there for 13 years. And I go through all of science, and I show that the Zionists and the Jesuits are basically corrupting and controlling all of science, and I go systematically through everything, debunking Big Bangs, black holes, quantum mechanics, nuclear atoms, strings, one-dimensional strings, if you can believe that insanity. and 10 to the 500th versions of string theory, that also disqualifies it immediately. So, I mean, I've got an enormous amount of work on my website, and then I've got over 700 videos on my YouTube channel, which support everything I'm saying, you know.
All right, Bill, very good. We'll let people, check that out for themselves. And, of course, if you want to hear more, stay with us in the second hour. We're going to continue with Robert Otey and talk more about his work. And I also want to ask you a bit more about some of the Jewish invention myths. It's kind of interesting. You've done some work there as well, kind of going on from Einstein, basically, and to a very kind of, well, heavily ethnocentric, promoted, basically, field here, right, of a scientific field which is led today by Jewish academics. And I want to ask you if there's more behind it than just them being, you know, extremely intelligent and talented, which is kind of the explanation that we get for that. So much more to ask you about there. Give us the website once again, and of course the main book that you do have out is called Gravity is a Myth and Doesn't Exist. Where do they go to get that?
The same place, feandft.com, which is Free Energy and Free Thinking abbreviated. feandft.com. And so, yeah, both books are available. The 1,200-page book has been up for 13 years. It's free. You're welcome. It's basically a trail of all the research I've done over the last 25 years. It's a good research site that will give you access to tons and tons of websites that back everything I'm saying. The Gravity book is the first thing I've actually charged money for. I've given my music away for free for the last 13 years as well. This book has cost $7.77. It's only 77 pages, but I felt like I finally deserved a little bit of money. It's all my work for that. And it is a very, very important, topic. It's a very important statement that I'm saying that gravity doesn't exist, because if you get rid of gravity, the entire gravitation-based cosmogony falls with it. And there's dozens and dozens of things that are inventions or mathematical inventions based on the fiction of gravity.
All right, well, something different for you to check out, folks. Thanks, Robert, for that. Also, of course, do take a look in our archives, if you're a member, or check out our YouTube channel for the some of the Electric Universe shows that we've done as well. I think that'll give you a different view if you're new to some of this. I know we get newcomers all the time. We, get new people coming in and listening, and we cover a lot of different topics on the show as well, on the program. So if you want to hear more, that's what I'm saying, do check the archives. We'll link those up as related as well. But, okay, we'll take a short break. We'll be right back with more of Robert Otey and some of his ideas and theories. Stay with us. Talk to you soon. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to hear more of this program, redicemembers.com is the website. Go there to subscribe, and you can stream or download any of our shows in full. We have over 1,000 shows going back to 2006, including videos, TV episodes, old webcasts, and a lot more coming as well. Also, of course, don't forget, if you're new to the show, our free archive, including news and other resources and material, is on redicecreations.com. We have RSS feeds on both sites. Don't forget to subscribe to those to get the latest material come right to you. But we have more to talk about with Robert, and we'll continue to press deeper into the line of questioning that he has opened up for us and talked with us about. And I question the validity and also kind of, I guess, raise a concern about taking a, you know, the everything is fake approach and what that does to us when it comes to other subjects. I do think it's a valid one. And at the same time, we must continue to question everything, which is, of course, how we learn to begin with. We would never do this radio show if that wasn't a fundamental component to our approach to life. As they say, have an open mind, but not so open that your brain falls out. There is a balance in between all of this, I think. We also hear more about the class of scientists that have been pushed as heroes of our time. Not only Einstein, but also, you know, Carl Sagan, Michio Kaku, Neil deGrasse Tyson, and many of that ilk. So, redicemembers.com, that is the website. Head on over there, and we'll talk to you in the second segment. Don't forget to comment on the show. Thank you again for listening, and Happy New Year, everyone. We have a really exciting 2016 lined up with a lot of new developments, redesigns, and breaking some new ground as well. So good stuff ahead. We'll be right back with Hour 2.